Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, May 1st, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023 on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right. So first thing I'll talk about is it's been raining and raining and raining. So I have to ask you, when you went round Bassett's Ridge Road, was it closed?
No.
Oh, okay. So it isn't that high.
Not like it was a week ago or wherever it was.
Really?
Yeah, not even close.
Even though it rained a lot. Well, does that mean they opened or closed the dam, or how does that work?
They left the gates open longer, maybe. Also, you know, the rivers are really full right now, and it may get a lot worse by the end of today because the rivers are now flowing down into the lake.
So. Because of the cresting.
Okay.
Cresting, when the rivers crest. Yeah, the rivers crest after the actual storm. That's a thing. It's a much worse thing down Mississippi.
Right.
Yeah, at the delta there. That's not a good thing. So anyway, it's been raining a lot. And if you've been feeling like, oh, I don't feel like doing anything, I don't want to go outside. Some of you I've seen went outside and either walked or biked despite the weather. So kudos to you. I did not. I made really good friends with Zwift, and 3 days in a row I rode on my Zwift, and even this morning when it was still sort of soggy and windy out, although it just doesn't work for me to get major exercise on Monday afternoons just because of scheduling. There's charts and there's chiropractic and there's yoga and it's just a whole thing. So I tend to get my major exercise before I do the show. So that's a good thing when you figure out how to schedule your day in a way that works for you. And sometimes it means that if you would rather, I would love to be outside, but being outside is hard for me on a day like today when it wasn't so nice in the morning and morning is my window. So you have to figure out whatever will work for you. And if it's going to be nice later and not so nice in the morning, but your window of time to do the activity is in the morning, and it means you have to be inside, it's okay. And what I may do is, if the weather's nice enough at 5:30, I'll do my yoga class outside. We'll see. And because it's just a little iffy, it's like if it's high 50s, low 60s, kind of cold. So we'll see. And ground soggy, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you felt like staying inside with a cat and a book and a cup of tea yesterday and not doing very much, it's okay. You know, if your body is telling you to rest, we are diurnal creatures and we are stimulated by light. So when there isn't a lot of light, we feel kind of down, like not doing a lot. Do you feel like when it's rainy and dreary out, you don't feel like doing as much?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's okay. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, and it doesn't mean you're not industrious. What it means is that we are diurnal creatures, and we are stimulated by light. And when there isn't a lot of light, we don't feel as energetic. So I think it's a good idea to lean into it, because I have so many patients who are like, what can I do with this minute to accomplish something? And they have to be accomplishing something 24/7. And then they come in and they ask me, why can't I sleep? And they're going constantly. And I have to tell them, well, one of the things that's good to do is slow down. And there's all kinds of ways to slow down. There's that cat in that book. If you don't have a cat, you can use a stuffed toy, which I have plenty of. I don't have a dog either, unfortunately. Just read a book, snuggle up in bed, watch a movie. It's really okay to have some days where you don't accomplish anything if you're busy accomplishing stuff the rest of the week. I promise you, you'll feel like accomplishing something in a couple of days. It's really okay. So today I think we're going to get a little bit of sunshine later in the day, and then the rest of the week, it's going to be up and down, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're not going to get like really good weather maybe till the weekend, it looks like. It's just been one of those springs. And, you know, the other thing that's been happening is I've been getting those 1 year reminders. This is what you were doing a year ago today on Strava. Remember that we did that nice ride? We did a rail trail ride, and we went off the rail trail and went to Goodwin Forest to check out the progress on the dam there. Mm-hmm. That was a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a year ago. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it was nice, a nice day. We've just been having a dream. We had those couple of days where it was really hot out, and now it's now we're getting this long spell of really dreary, chilly weather. You can't break out your shorts. I'm looking forward to a week and a half from now when I'll be in Florida because I'm going to need it. So today is May 1st. If you're listening, obviously if you're not listening on May 1st, it's not May 1st, but this is being recorded on May 1st. So let's say happy Beltane. Let's talk about what is Beltane. And it's a fire festival. And it's one of the four quarter day festivals. Members of communities will come together to celebrate the return of the summer, even though it's kind of still spring. The observance of this hugely important time in turning of the wheel of the year was characterized by a celebration of the return of the fertility of the land and would have been a time when livestock would have been put out to pasture. That's another thing we did. We went to the farm to table store up in Woodstock on Saturday, and we saw the cows, and they were very cute. And the word Beltane translates as bright fire. And so it's one of the most important rituals. It survives today in modern festivals. It concerns the lighting of the Beltane bonfire. It was seen as fire is seen as a purifier and healer and would have been walked around and danced or jumped over by members of the community. Farmers would have also driven their cattle between bonfires to cleanse and protect them before putting them out in the fields. In ancient communities, all hearth fires would have been extinguished and a new night fire lit, which would have then been used to relight people's hearths in their own homes. In this way, the community was connected to each other by the sacred fire, which was central to everyone. The festival would have been a time of courtship rituals and a celebration of our own fertility. So it's important to note that when thinking about our own festival, it's the joy and the revelry that is fostered in the ritual. It's about casting off of the darkness and celebrating the light. It's a time to celebrate fertility in our own biological functions and our creative energies and the fertility of our creative communities. So
oh boy.
The modern Beltane festival is inspired by the ancient Gaelic festival of Beltane, which began on the evening before May 1st and marked the beginning of summer. The modern festival was started in 1988 by a small group of enthusiasts, including the musical collective of Test Department, with academic support from the School of Scottish Studies at the University of Edinburgh. Since then, the festival's grown and now involves over 300 voluntary collaborators and performers, with the available tickets often selling out. And then just, you know, people all over the world celebrate Beltane in their own ways. They have maypoles. They dance around the maypoles. They dance with the ribbons, and they make the braiding around the pole, and it's very nice. And just celebrate the coming of spring and fertility and stuff like that. So happy Beltane for those who celebrate. And if you don't necessarily celebrate, just be aware that spring is here. There's lots of flowers out there. And the flower, that's the other thing, because of, I guess, all the rain as well as the early warmer temperatures, the flowers bloomed earlier this year. We have this gorgeous bush in front of our house that's...
pink.
It's pink. It's a hybrid azalea rhododendron, and it has a special name, and so it's a very large bush. It's the size of a big rhododendron, but it has flowers that look like a combination of azaleas and rhododendrons. This gorgeous shade of slightly purpley light pink. I love it. I look forward to it blooming every year. What usually happens is it peaks when I go visit my mother in Florida, because I usually visit my mother sometime like towards the end of the first week of May, because I like to be there on Mother's Day. Well, this year, Mother's Day is kind of late. Mother's Day is 11, 12, 13, there's a 14th this year. So this year, everything bloomed early. The bush is peaking now, and it's mm-hmm. only May 1st. So I went outside and got some pictures with it. And really what I should do is put on a nice dress and have you take a picture of me in front of the bush.
Okay.
And looking.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could do that. All right. So anyway, enjoy your flowers. We have bluettes blooming in the yard and violets. The daffodils are already done. Do we have more bulbs? Yeah, we have irises coming up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, irises that have not come up yet. And We have
viruses, maybe gladiolas.
Oh, nice. And we have brown-eyed Susans that they won't bloom for another month or so. But I'm looking forward to those because we had, I think a bird came and laid down seeds in our yard. Mm-hmm. And because there was, they were scattered randomly, and we've never had brown-eyed Susans before, and you did not plant them.
No.
So a bird did.
I think it's where our red maple came from, too, that's on the edge of the driveway.
A bird?
I didn't plant it there, and a red maple is not normally a, it's kind of a cultivated maple.
So
it's
a bird not, ate the seed, and then...
And right there.
Yeah!
That was their spot.
I think that's what happened with the brown-eyed Susans as well. Okay, so then the other thing I have to tell you about is that there's going to be an art show, and I was talking about this last week, but it hasn't happened yet, so I have to tell you about it. All right, so now if I can get into it. Okay, and Dead Link. All right, Dead Link. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to get some information from you about that art show. Be right with you.
Okay, where is this art show?
The art show is at the Moulton... Okay, got it. So, the art show is called Trigger Warning, Shadows and Reflections Art Show, Exploring Experiences of Trauma, Addiction, Abuse, Mental Illness, and the Healing Journey. It opens on the full moon, which is Friday, May 5th. It'll be open from 5 to 8 p.m. on that day, and then it'll be open May 6th and 7th from 12 to 4 p.m. There will be a poetry reading on Saturday and an open mic. It begins... and the begins at sign up by, you sign up by 12:30, and it will feature performances by Devin Samuels. There will be mask making workshops on Sunday at 2 p.m. It's at the Moulton Lava Gallery. Moulton Lava.
Moulton Lava.
Because it's on Moulton Court. Moulton Lava. How cool is that? That's 31 funny. Moulton Court in Willimantic. You can park on the street and in the lower lot. There is a suggested donation. No one is turned away. Proceeds will go to the Natural Hospital for art and writing supplies. So once again, that's the Trigger Warning Shadows and Reflections Art Show. We'll open on the full moon Friday, May 5th, 5 to 8 p.m. May 6th and 7th, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. There will be a Saturday poetry reading and open mic, and you can sign up by 12:30 p.m. Mask making workshop Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Moulton Lava Gallery, 31 Moulton Court, Willimantic, Connecticut. And you can park in the street in the lower lot. Okay, so that's what's going on.
I think that's the old ribbon factory.
Might be. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on Moulton Court. There's sort of warehousey things there. Okay, so the next thing up is that, once again, I went to the CNPA conference, the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association conference, and I wanted to give you... A summary of all of the different things, some highlights of some of the things that I learned. So I went through, there's so much and it's so rich and there's so many things that I learned that it's going to take a couple of weeks to give you an idea of what I learned. So I'm going to repeat something that I said last week, which is a brilliant quote, and it is this. Hippocrates said, "If we could give every individual the right amount of nourishment and exercise, not too little and not too much, we would have found the safest way to health." I'll read that again. Hippocrates said, "If we could give every individual the right amount of nourishment and exercise, not too little and not too much, we would have found the safest way to health." And one of the things we talked about last week is the mTOR pathway, the mechanistic target of rapamycin. And if you overstimulate the mTOR pathway, you get inflammation. And there was a study that was done in mice that showed that if mice were either didn't exercise, were given the opportunity to exercise as they wished voluntarily, or were forced to exercise, you had different outcomes for each one. The ones that did not exercise had more inflammation and more levels of mTOR happening. The mTOR pathway was calmed in the animals that exercised, but the ones that had voluntary exercise had their mTOR pathways calmed down more than the ones that were forced to exercise. So that's very interesting. And what that goes back to is if you are tired and you push yourself, you're not doing yourself any favors. You could, in fact, be increasing inflammation in your body. That so the animals that voluntarily, so that means if you're exhausted and you push yourself to do tasks, whether it's work, whether it's working in the yard, whether it's regular exercise, you could be increasing inflammation and shortening your lifespan, because when you have too much mTOR activity, it leads to advanced faster aging. So so respect rest. It all goes back to respecting rest. It is so important to respect rest.
Mm.
All right. So the next thing I want to talk about was that Debbie Hamilton, MD, came and she talked about chronic disease in children. And so she talked about a few major points. Again, these were absolutely rich and incredible talks with so much in them, but I'm only going to give you the highlights. So children, the first thing she talked about is children in EMFs, electromagnetic fields, were living in a big electromagnetic soup. And children are exposed to these things and they have still developing brains. So we don't know what it's doing to their nervous systems. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that that exposure to EMFs is one of the things that's causing children to have more learning disabilities, to have more incidence of spectrum disorders, to have behavioral disorders, and to have mental health issues? And we have so much EMF around, and Ron and I are sitting in EMF right now. We have a bunch of computers going. He's working on his tablet. I'm talking to you from my tablet. We have a computer that's recording this show, and he has another computer that he's going to read his show from, and I have my phone here. So we have way too much EMF, and we have Wi-Fi in the house, and we're going to get better Wi-Fi, we think, in September.
At some point, yeah.
Yes. So I have some stuff that's interesting. I don't know how well it works. I don't know if there's good studies on it. Personally, I wear a bracelet. It's a mineral called shungite. Shungite is from the village of Shunga in Russia, and it's supposed to help to absorb electromagnetic fields. Does it absolutely work? I don't know 100%. I have this nice little bracelet. It's very comfortable. It's easy for me to wear. It may be working. You can get pieces of shungite. So this is a bracelet. You can get shungite necklaces. You can also get shungite, pieces of shungite with adhesive on them that you can attach to your devices. So you can put a piece of shungite on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, and it can help to absorb electromagnetic fields. I actually have a big shungite rock that just sits on my desk at the office. And if you are into purifying your minerals, You can do things like you can smudge it, you can burn sage, which will, sage is definitely shown to clear microorganisms. Energetically, it may help to clear reset it energetically. I also have, I have a spray that has red cedar and sage essential oil in it. So I'll just spray very easily spray these, and I'll spray the rock at work, and sometimes I'll just spray the office. And whether or not you believe that essential oils in sage, things like sage and cedar and juniper in the sacred herbs, are clearing for spiritual energy and electromagnetic energy, they're definitely antimicrobial. That there are microbes floating around in the air, they will kill a certain percentage of the microbes that are in the air. That's just because. You know, they have antimicrobial properties and they collide with viruses and bacteria, they're going to kill them. So it does definitely clear something. So that's an interesting thing that you can do. The other thing, of course, is to have electromagnetic fasts where you either turn everything off in the house or you go camping, go somewhere where you don't have devices and you just be in nature. Or even if you don't go camping, go for a walk in the woods or go sit in your yard and get away from electromagnetic field. Yes, there's electromagnetic fields all over the place, I know, but if you go out in the forest, if you go out in the woods and you get in the phytoncides that are in the trees there, those are clearing as well. And so you're going to have the energy from the forest and the trees that are going to help to cleanse you and help you to feel better. So that's something that can help you. The other thing that Debbie Hamilton talked about was glyphosate. So glyphosate is what Roundup is. Glyphosate is a pesticide, and it is known to be a probable human carcinogen. she mentioned that there are high levels of glyphosate in, wait for it, Cheerios. And how often do little kids get given Cheerios as snacks?
Ew.
I know, because they're easy to grab onto and eat, and they're a little sweet and a little sugary. And so glyphosate is short for N-phosphonomethylglycine. Part of glyphosate is the amino acid glycine, and glycine is a very necessary amino acid in our bodies. It's not an essential amino acid because our bodies can manufacture it, but we have a lot of tissues. All of our collagenous structures, that means all of our fibrous structures, our muscles, our bones, and the structure of all of our organs have glycine in them. And so glyphosate can attach to any of those structures. So it's high in Cheerios. Glyphosate is applied to wheat before the harvest in the U.S., generally not in Europe, which may be part of why people tolerate European wheat, but not American. How many times have you heard people say, I can't eat wheat when I'm in the United States, but when I go to Europe, to the European mainland, I'm fine. I can eat wheat in Italy, I can eat wheat in France, I have no problem. And it's because they don't use glyphosate, or we think it's because they don't use glyphosate. So that would be a reason here, if you think you're gluten intolerant, but you don't have celiac disease, one thing you could try is to use organic gluten-containing grains and see how you do with them. If you have celiac disease, you're reacting to gluten, and you're going to react to gluten, you're going to react to Hordein, you're going to react to cicalin. Hordein is the gliadin-like protein in barley, and cicalin is the gliadin-like protein in rye. So you're going to, if you have celiac disease, you're going to make antibodies to those. So you can't eat those. But if you have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, like I kind of do, I do better if I don't eat gluten, then you might find that if you eat rye or barley or wheat that is organic, it's not going to have glyphosate on it, and you may do better with it. And I definitely do better personally with einkorn. Anyway, I do well with einkorn. I tried doing rye sourdough. I didn't do as well with that, only in that it gave me a lot of gas, if you will. But like if I ate it day after day, that's what happened to me. So that was unfortunate. And so I really wanted to have a little bit of it, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to. So anyway, so glyphosate can be really problematic that way. So it's a good idea. If you absolutely can't get your kid to eat gluten-free, at least try doing organic gluten-bearing grains so that you're eliminating the glyphosate problem. And if you can get spelt, for example. Spelt is pretty close to wheat. It's not exactly the same as wheat, but it's pretty close. If you get a nice loaf of spelt bread, your kids might enjoy that. You can see. So then there's lead, and there can be lead in the environment. If you live in an old house, there can be lead there. And there are various ways that kids can get exposed to lead. In more modern houses, they don't tend to, but it can happen. And I'm required to check it. When I do a state physical, whether it's for school or camp or sports, there's a state form. And on the state form, I'm supposed to check kids for lead. And most of the time, they come back negative for lead. Once in a while they do. If they've lived in an old house and if they've come in contact with old paint, there still can be lead in it. So if you have lead toxicity, that can lead to iron deficiency. So because lead and iron are both bivalent, they both have a charge of two, and they're cationic, they're positively charged, and they can substitute in the same places. So you can get an anemia because lead is replacing your iron. And so the other side of that is if you eat adequate iron, or you take iron and copper and other minerals, it can help to weed out lead that is coming into your environment. But if you have lead toxicity can lead to neurological deficits. So that's something you can check. If your kids are having behavioral problems or issues, you can check them for heavy metal issues. And so the next thing that Debbie Hamilton talked about was chronic diarrhea. If your child has chronic diarrhea, you can test their stool to see if they have Clostridium species. Because Clostridium species, and they, if they have like Clostridium difficile, they'll be really, really sick. But if they have just ongoing loose stools and stuff, they could have low levels of Clostridium species that are not necessarily difficile. And you can clear those. You can use antimicrobials to clear them. The other thing is that kids in the spectrum tend to have two times as much candida as kids who are not in the spectrum. Is that because they probably tend towards dysbiosis? There's something to do with the structure of their digestive systems, because they do tend to have dysbiosis. It could also be that they are very, they're rigid about how they eat, and it's hard to get them to eat a diet where they're avoiding sugar and starchy food and sugar. So if they're eating a lot of starchy food and sugar and they're not eating a lot of protein and produce, they're going to tend, anybody who eats like that is going to tend to have more yeast. So when kids have more yeast, you can do things like give probiotics that can outcompete them, like Saccharomyces boulardii. Saccharomyces boulardii, by the way, will outcompete a lot of unfriendly microorganisms. It's known, you give it to people just who have diarrhea, and you don't necessarily know why they have diarrhea, but you give Saccharomyces boulardii to them. It can help to calm their diarrhea. And what Saccharomyces boulardii is, it is a probiotic yeast. So it's a yeast, it's not candida, it's not harmful. In fact, it's good for you. Anything that's a probiotic is good for your system. So it outcompetes detrimental yeast like candida, and it helps to acidify the colon so other good species can grow, and it helps to calm down symptoms and diarrhea and stuff like that. So of course, when you have a child in the spectrum, you're looking at a gluten and dairy free diet. Gluten and dairy free diets will help regardless of whether the child actually has celiac disease or a true food intolerance to gluten and dairy. Gluten and dairy, when they're eaten, they can, in susceptible people, they can produce glutamorphines and caseomorphines. They are compounds that are opioid-like, and they will cause cognitive deficits. So kids in the spectrum, one of the first things you do is you take them off gluten and dairy. And so you might see some better cognitive functioning when you do that. So you can give antimicrobials, grapefruit seed extract. You have to find ways to get it into them. If you can do grapefruit seed extract drops or oregano oil drops in some kind of a food that masks it. I like to use applesauce and apple butter for kids in the spectrum because they're sweet and they taste good and they don't necessarily have added sugar. So that can be helpful. The other thing you do is biofilm busters. So biofilms are proteins that microorganisms, especially bacteria, will make to protect them from the immune system. So if you can break the biofilms down, you can get the antimicrobials and the immune system at the bacteria to reduce them. So biofilms busters are usually they're usually enzymes. So natokinase and lumbrokinase are biofilm busters. They break down biofilms. And then there's also hemicellulase. Hemicellulase is a compound that breaks down yeast. All kinds of probiotics. There's good probiotics that are helpful. There's many species that are helpful for cognitive issues and just for detoxification and health in general. Then there's omega-3 fatty acids, of course. And omega-3 fatty acids is really important. It's, again, this is cognitive stuff 101 for pretty much anything. Most people can benefit from taking fish oil or some version of omega-3 fatty acids. And if somebody has cognitive deficits, omega-3 fatty acids become very important. And again, if you have somebody who's a picky eater, is not eating healthfully, they're probably not eating a lot of nuts and seeds. They're probably not eating a lot of fish. So getting some omega-3s into it can be helpful. And if they're willing to take, if they can take, they make tiny pills that are flavored, that if they bite them, they taste good. So they can taste like strawberry and they taste like lemon. You can give those. You can also give emulsions. I'm not thrilled with emulsions because they have natural alternative sweeteners in them. And then they have emulsifiers in it. And the emulsifiers make it so that the dose per unit volume is lower, so you have to give more. Anyway, but if that's the way you're going to get, I think it's better to take those emulsified essential fatty acids than it is not to have them at all. So the emulsified essential fatty acids can be really tasty. They can come in lemon swirl and tutti frutti and orange and lime and all kinds of different flavors. And they can be for picky eaters who are adults as well. So there are creative ways that you can get omega-3 fatty acids in. All right. And then you have to look at methylation. So you have to figure out, do they have an MTHFR anomaly? That's methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase. And that's a genetic test, and that can be done. You can just do that through your regular lab, although insurance won't necessarily pay for it. Other ways to get your MTHFR checked is if you are in contact with somebody who can order a psychiatric test for you. There are psychiatric tests where they do your genetics and they figure out which, based on your genetics, which pharmaceuticals will work for you psychiatrically. And you don't necessarily have to be willing to take a psychiatric drug, but if you do that test, you'll get your MTHFR checked along with a lot of other things that can be helpful to know. Another way to do it is to do one of those ancestry services and get your raw data from the ancestry service, and then you find out some cool stuff about yourself, like where your ancestry is from. And if you do 23andMe, then you can find out some other genetic stuff about your body. And then there are then other services where you can find out what your methylation detoxification status is. So you do one of those services, which can be, you pay a nominal fee for that. And then if you go to your naturopath can help you to find out what your MTHFR status is, your COMT, which is catechol-O-methyltransferase. If you have an anomaly in catechol-O-methyltransferase, you're going to tend to be more anxious. And there are things you can do to calm yourself down if you have increased COMT. And then there's other things like N-acetyltransferase and GLP. There's a lot of different genes, a lot of other methylation and detoxification genes, as superoxide dismutase is another one, where if you have anomalies in those, there's ways you can supplement and eat that can minimize the effects of those genetic anomalies. So those are all really good things to find out, particularly if you're in the spectrum, whether you have frank autism or if you have ADHD or anything in between, or even if you just want to know. I think it's a good thing to know. Me, Fran, I have an MTHFR anomaly because I checked myself, and which means that I got it from either my mother or my father, because I'm heterozygous for MTHFR C677T, which means I have the tendency to make too much homocysteine, so I need to make sure I get in adequate vitamins B12, B6, and folic acid. I'll probably check my homocysteine before too long to see if it's elevated. And if so, then I have to get in some B6, B12, and folic acid. So that's something that you can check. And if you have an MTHFR anomaly, then you may need extra B12, B6, and folic acid, and it can affect things like neurotransmitter production. So it can affect your cognitive abilities. It can affect your ability to make proteins, neurotransmitters, and it can affect detoxification. So that homocysteine pathway, if that homocysteine is backed up, homocysteine gets converted to cystathionine, which gets converted to cysteine, which gets converted to glutathione. So you need that pathway for detoxification. And if you have your homocysteine backed up, you're probably not detoxifying as well as you should. So that's something that's worth looking into. All right. She also talked about congenital Lyme. And congenital Lyme would be mom had Lyme disease while baby was in utero. And so now baby has chronic Lyme from birth, and that will affect neurological development. So that's worth looking into. And how you would do that, you would get a good test from your naturopathic physician or functional doctor who can assess whether the child has chronic Lyme. And then you would treat accordingly. With all kinds, there's so many different things you can treat with. There's different kinds of mother tincture herbal remedies that you can use. There's mixed homeopathics. There's frequency enhanced herbs that you can use. There's so many things that you can use to help to eradicate Lyme. But the major thing, which I learned from my colleague Mariah Hinchy, who I hear her at a lot of conferences, but the main thing that you do to treat Lyme disease is not necessarily antimicrobials. It's to improve the terrain, and that means make the body inhospitable for the growth of these microorganisms. So that means getting good rest, getting good sleep, getting good exercise, sweating, drinking lots of water, eating healthy food, avoiding junk food, avoiding too much sugar and caffeine and alcohol and processed food and things like that. So the healthier you are, the less unfriendly microorganisms of all types you will have, but particularly tick-borne illness. All right. And I think she mentioned astragalus, and I didn't realize that astragalus could be useful for Epstein-Barr virus. So chronic Epstein-Barr is something worth looking into. One of the things that I will do sometimes with some people, like if people are just not getting better, I will check their Epstein-Barr status, and I'll check them for Epstein-Barr antibodies and also check them for Epstein-Barr early antigen. And if they have a positive early antigen, and possibly if they have other Epstein-Barr antibodies, I'll treat them. And how you treat them, you give them things like astragalus, olive leaf, and elderberry also can help to take out Epstein-Barr. And I take olive leaf all the time, and I take elderberry most of the time. I haven't been taking astragalus lately, but how many things am I going to take, right? So, all right. And so so the next thing I wanted to mention is, let me see if there's... we talked to my buddy. Okay, so I'm going to wait to talk about that piece, the MK4 stuff. I'll talk about that later. Okay, so we had a talk about trauma in the fascia, that trauma is held in the fascia. And if you have chronic unpredictable stress, for example, a worldwide pandemic, it can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Another thing that's interesting is I have some patients who come in and they tell me, I just can't take that really deep breath. And I remember I had somebody come in not too long ago who said, I try to get a real deep breath in, but I just can't do it. So I get worried about them, of course, and I have to make sure that they don't have a cardiovascular problem. Because if you can't get a deep breath, it could be coronary artery disease. It could also be something wrong with your lungs. So depending on the situation, I might get them to go see a pulmonologist to make sure they don't have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, they don't have COPD, they don't have asthma, they don't have a restrictive disorder. It just really depends on what's going on. If they're not too sick, and like if they have that going on and they're telling me they're getting regular exercise, they're doing their activities of daily living, but they just can't get that deep breath, I'll give them a couple of weeks to work on it. And one way to work on it is that the fascia in their ribs and their accessory muscles. So the accessory muscles of breathing are the ones in your chest, and they're going to be things like your pectorals and your serratus anterior, and which is along your ribs. All the muscles that attach to your ribs. Here's your sternocleidomastoid muscle. Here's your platysma. All these are accessory muscles of breathing because they impact your rib cage. So any of the muscles that impact your rib cage, if they're tight and not moving well, then you might have trouble getting that deep breath. So it's a good idea to just get good old massage. Regular Swedish massage could be a really good thing for you. Anything that causes you to relax deeply. There's so many things that can do that. And myofascial release can be really helpful. Acupressure can be helpful. Acupuncture can be helpful. Right now in Willimantic, we have Quiet Corner Float. If you go have a float in a hypersaline solution, well, I don't know if it's hypersaline or if it's hyper Epsom salt solution. Might be both. I'll have to look into that. I have to ask Angie, what's in the float? I'm pretty sure it's Epsom salt. It might also be salt. Sodium chloride.
No.
Yeah. You want to do a float? You don't want to do a float. I want to do a float because I feel I need to do it in order to have the experience so I can recommend it to people.
I think you should.
Sure that it's going to be wonderful, but, you know, I haven't done it yet. And I kept saying, oh, it'd be so cool to go to West Hartford and go to the float in West Hartford. And then I never went. And now Angie has it. It's in Willimantic. It's around the corner.
Hard to miss it now.
I'm no excuse. So I need to set up a float. I'll do that sooner rather than later. One of the ways I'm going to float is, well, I was talking to my mother yesterday. My mother's like, the pool, the heater in the pool wasn't working. I don't know about the heater in the hot tub. There's red tide in the water. Like, no, this is terrible. So I hope there's not red tide when I go there next week. And if that happens, you know, I guess I'll just do more walking and hiking and biking and not too much, you know, hanging out in the water. Maybe I'll take an Epsom salt bath in the bathtub. Which is, I would much rather take a sea salt bath in the Gulf. But if there's red tide in it, you can't do that.
No, because you get all stung and weird and
It hurts, and also hurts. You cough.
Right, and then there's the cough.
Yeah.
The cough is bad.
It's a weird cough,
so
yes.
So it affects your respiratory system.
Indeed. All right, so let's talk about that. So anyway, if you have that trouble taking a deep breath thing, anything that helps you to relax, somebody can get in there and work and do some myofascial release. Regular massage can help. Acupuncture can help. Acupressure can help. A float can help. If you're not good at breathing deeply, then practicing breathing deeply can help. Because if there's nothing in the way in your lungs, if it's in the way of your fascia, you may be able to exercise the fascia and then just breathe deeply. Cranial sacral therapy is really great as well. One of the things she talked about cranial sacral therapy, something I hadn't thought about, and that is that the dura mater, which is, I didn't realize this, it's a protective layer around your brain. If you're looking at me on Facebook Live, you see me touching the protective layer around my brain. The dura mater is fascia. Who knew? Mm-hmm. So when you do craniosacral therapy, you are accessing the fascia. So if there is trauma in the fascia of your brain, you can release it with cranial sacral therapy. And cranial sacral therapy works on the glymphatics. What in the heck are glymphatics?
I don't know. It sounds glim.
Oh. Glim?
I don't know. Is that a word?
Is that like glum?
It's like glum. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Here, I want to show you this. If you're watching me on Facebook Live, I want to show you this glass. When my stepson and my stepdaughter-in-law were coming for the holidays this year, they asked us if there was anything we like from the Windy City. And I said, why don't you get us some tumblers to drink out of that have Chicago on them? So they didn't like the ones that had actual Chicago on them. So instead they got us these, which I'm assuming is, a view around Lake Michigan. So they're very pretty and they're very nice. It's a nice size tumbler. I really enjoy using them. So thank you so much, Greg and Amanda, for bringing us these tumblers. As you can see, I am doing one of the major health items that you need to do every day, which is to drink water. Okay. So the glymphatics are lymphatics that are in your glial cells. And the glial cells are very important. They are the glue that sticks the neurons together in your brain. And so, and they transfer the fluids around your brain, the cerebrospinal fluid. So when you work on cranial sacral therapy, you're causing motion and balancing of the glymphatics. So one of the things that this doctor suggested is that where there is pain, there is usually trauma. And there's been some kind of trauma. So if you do some kind of therapy that can help to release trauma, it's going to be helpful. And even if the person says, I don't have any trauma, I haven't had a traumatic experience. If they have chronic pain, if you use methods that help with trauma, they are probably going to be helped. So, all right. So the next thing, well, this is probably how we'll wrap up today, is my buddy Mariah Hinchy. So Mariah Hinchy is at Tau Vitality over in Hebron. So she's my neighbor. And she is very fascinated with Lyme disease and tick-borne infections. And she gave a very clever talk called When Lyme and COVID Collide. And when I saw that she was giving that talk, I got very excited because I'm like, that's brilliant! Because there's going to be a lot of people around here who are in that very situation. So yay, Mariah. Thank you for giving that talk. So the big take home is that Lyme and COVID increase the same inflammatory cytokines. So an inflammatory cytokine is a compound that will go up when you have inflammation in your body, and Lyme and COVID kick up the same ones. And examples of those are IL-6, interleukin-6, TNF-alpha, which stands for tumor necrosis factor alpha, and also interleukin-1b. Also, she said that the spike protein, so the spike protein, you know that COVID-19 has this round structure, and then it has little spikes sticking out of it, and the spike protein is how it able to insert and attach itself to tissues. So the spike protein is almost identical in design to galectin-3, and galectin-3 is an inflammatory compound that will rise in your body, and galectin-3 rises in many inflammatory conditions, including cancer, including COVID-19, including tick-borne illness. So if somebody has chronic inflammation resulting from either Lyme or COVID, you can use modified citrus pectin. Modified citrus pectin is something that has been studied greatly to lower galectin-3. And when you have a chronic infection, your body will tend to keep kicking out this galectin-3. So if you can calm the galectin-3 with modified citrus pectin. So that's very interesting. So modified citrus pectin. So what's modified citrus pectin? So you know how you make jelly, and if you don't put pectin in it, it's all runny. So if you want to make jelly or jam and you want it to hold together a little bit, you put pectin in it. And what's pectin? Pectin is a kind of fiber that's found in fruit, and it's found in many kinds of fruit. It's very, it helps to stick the orange together. So it's extracted from citrus fruits, you take it, in its extracted form. It comes in a powder, and you can put it into any food or beverage, and it doesn't taste like very much, so you can throw it into applesauce or apple butter. You could probably throw it into hummus, but I'd probably throw it into something that's a little fruitier. You could probably stir it into food if you want to, some other kind of food if you want to, or some kind of a beverage. And you take it a few times a day. She recommends taking a scoop of it 3 times a day with meals, and it'll help to lower your inflammation. She also mentioned things. She went back and forth in that of talking about stuff to do with tick-borne illness as well as COVID. And she mentioned to us that spirochetes are the microorganisms, that's the form of microorganism that is in Lyme disease. Spirochetes are attracted to collagen. So when you're injured, it makes it easier for the spirochetes to get at your collagen. So I asked her an important question, which was, I meant to ask her this for years, but I finally remembered to ask her, which was, you know how it's very popular to consume collagen right now. People are consuming collagen peptides, and people are consuming bone broth. So they're eating collagen. If you eat collagen, are you going to increase your spirochetes in your body? And she said she did not think so. She said that... in fact, if you throw more collagen into your body, the spirochetes might go after the collagen that you are eating, and better to go after that collagen than to go after your innate collagen. If you consume collagen, it's probably a good thing to consume more collagen if you have tick-borne illness, because it's going to help with rebuilding, because the spirochetes are going after your innate collagen. So if you put more on, your total collagen load is going to be higher. So having things like bone broth to rebuild, or having collagen peptides on board, is going to be helpful when you have tick-borne illness. And then the other thing you have to remember is that antimicrobials, there's so many antimicrobials you can use to get rid of your tick-borne illness. There's monolaurin, there's the aquified form of monolaurin called aqualaurin, water-soluble monolaurin. There's oregano oil. There's all of the different herbs like Japanese knotweed and cryptolepis and cat's claw and sarsaparilla and red root and andrographis. So there's so many different herbs that you can use. There's cimento, and there's pinella, and there's berber. There's all those different herbs. Any antimicrobials you use, they won't completely eradicate your tick-borne illness. Your immune system has to do the rest, so you have to take care of the terrain. That's what we said. So you have to eat, sleep, drink, poop, exercise, sweat, do all of those things right so that your body is going to be in a healthy state. So here's another interesting thing that she talked about. Tick saliva inhibits interleukin 8, interleukin 12, interferon gamma. It shifts your TH1, TH2 white blood cell function, and also inhibits nitric oxide. So if you're inhibiting a lot of these inflammatory compounds, your immune system is not going to work as well. If you inhibit nitric oxide, you're going to inhibit generalized circulation. So a sterile tick can still affect your immune system. You can have somebody who's bitten by a tick who doesn't feel well. You test them for tick-borne illness, and they don't have tick-borne illness. So when they so it messes up their immune system. So then you have to do things for the terrain and do things that are anti-inflammatory. Now, getting back to what affects COVID-19, you can protect your ACE2 receptors. Now, so the ACE2 receptors are in the lungs. They're in the cardiovascular system. And you can protect your ACE2 receptors from COVID-19 with various herbs. And they would include kudzu, red sage, ginkgo, luteolin, and escalus. Escalus is horse chestnut. So all these things can protect your ACE2 receptors from COVID-19. Scoot Bake, that's affectionate, an affectionate name for Scutellaria bakelensis, which is Chinese skullcap, and Isatis are great herbal antivirals. Isatis is used largely in Chinese medicine. Then there's natokinase and lumbrokinase. Those can help to break down microclots. So I also use enzymes that contain trypsin, because I found that when I started using an enzyme that contained trypsin, my D-dimer went down. And D-dimer is a marker for increased clotting. So I'm assuming that I had some microclot situation stuff going on in my body. So natokinase is from natto. Natto is a fermented soy product that's used in, that's popular in Japanese cuisine. And you can get pills that have natokinase in it. And I'm taking natokinase now. I'm not taking lumbrokinase. I'm taking natokinase and I'm taking an enzyme with trypsin in it. And my D-dimer has come down. And then there's ashwagandha. And so if you get a tick bite and you, if you get a tick bite, regardless, you can take ashwagandha and it's going to help your immune system. But if you get one of those tick bites, but you're sterile, like you don't feel well, but you don't apparently have Lyme disease, you can take ashwagandha and that's going to help the immune system, help to reset the immune system, those interleukins. So great talk by my buddy Mariah. Big shout out to her over there in Hebron, and hope to collaborate with her sometimes. And, we supported her last year when she had the Lyme Bites Conference, and we promoted the Lyme Bites Conference here at Radio Naturopath and did a promotion for her at WHUS. So she's done a lot of good work in the area because she's very local and she helps a lot of people with their tick-borne illness. So that's great. Okay, so the last thing we'll talk about today is a short bit on PANS and PANDA. So PANS is what it is. It's when you get you get a sort of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder like syndrome or a psychiatric syndrome, severe agitation and fear and anxiety that results from having some kind of a microbial insult. So PANS can come from streptococcus, it can come from staphylococcus, it can come from Lyme disease, it can come from various microbes. And one of the things that you see is if you're looking at it in children, you'll see the child has sudden enuresis where they've been, they've been potty trained and they've been doing fine for the longest time, and all of a sudden they're wetting the bed. They have sudden separation anxiety, emotional lability. Their emotions are all over the place. They have behavioral degeneration or regression. They've learned to do some things and they start regressing. You know, they want to hang on to the parent a lot longer. They're no longer independent like they were, and they can't sleep. They might also have short-term memory loss. They also might have choreiform movement. Choreiform movement is movement that looks like dancing. So you have them put their hands out and they'll start moving their fingers like they're playing the piano. Right? That's choreiform movement. The microorganisms you can check for are Streptococcus, Staph aureus, and they can also have tick-borne illness and have this syndrome. And there are berberines can be really helpful for as an antimicrobial for pans and panda. And berberines are found in berberis in Mahonia and Oregon grape and golden seal and golden thread. Also herbs that don't have berberines in them, like neem, oregano, cordyceps, and garlic can also be wonderful antimicrobials for these conditions. And the other thing, I like to check a lot of my patients, old and young, for mycoplasma. Mycoplasma pneumonia, people get it really commonly. It's not unusual for me to see people with antibodies to mycoplasma. And if they're not doing well, for whatever reason, I might go ahead and treat the mycoplasma. And what I do, usually I give either oregano oil. I do oregano oil or olive leaf or silver nanoparticles, silver hydrosol. I might do berberines as well. You can also use elder for those. Vitamins A, D, and C can be helpful. Also L-lysine, which is an amino acid that can be helpful. And monolaurin, which is extract of coconut, that is a wonderful antiviral. Zinc is an antiviral. You can give non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs just for some relief, but don't do those ongoing. She also mentioned SPMs, SPM stand for? SPM is specialized, they're modulators, and I can't remember what the P stands for, but what it is, it's an extract of essential fatty acids that causes resolving. That's what it is. Specialized pro-resolving mediators. That's what SPM stands
for.
There you go. Because they act as resolvins, and resolvins are a big portion of what causes the reduction of inflammation from essential fatty acids. So we're going to leave it there today. Essential fatty acids and SPMs, great for reducing inflammation in general and also for PANS and PANDA. And we have more next week. So this is giving me a lot to talk about. It's really great. So I'm going to sign off now. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensed of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician.
Mm.
Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.